Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Monday's Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. Much like the winners column of the Scottish Football, there are no jambos here today. Instead, I'm Graham Thulis and I'm joined by Craig Anderson.
Hello.
Also a winner. Yeah. And Andy Harrow.
Hello.
Also a winner. So we've got three winners today on today's Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I presume everyone is well, everyone is keeping well.
We all skipped in to record this today. It must be, given the amount of jambos that we do have on the podcast, It must be a rare occasion that we've got everyone's team won. Because when was the last time they won a game of football?
And it's funny as well that with the number of jambos on this podcast, on a Monday, after Hearts have been absolutely terrible for the 100th week in a row, there's no jambos available.
Interesting, isn't it?
It's funny how it works like that, isn't it? Anyway, along that note, we will start at Tynecastle as the glorious Steelmen bodied Hearts 3-2 in a game going on about 5 or 6 for Motherwell, with goals from Declan Gallagher, a wonder strike from, I almost called him Clarence Seedorf there, Sherman Seedorf, and then the winning goal from Jermaine Hilton. Hearts are rotten, eh? Very bad.
But you're even looking at, I'm looking at the team that's in front of me, and okay, they've got players missing, but even on paper, it doesn't look like a good team.
No.
On paper, it reminds me, in some ways, we've got some better players of like the sort of Hibs teams that would like stumble on towards like not quite getting relegated every season under Calderwood before Fenlon and Butcher finally pulled the trigger on them. But you're just looking at that and you're like, when you're having to, folk like Jamie Brandon and Andy Irving in the team, it's not that they're necessarily awful players, but they're not Hearts players.
Jamie Brandon, while I understand that Hearts have a real and sort of good collection of young players going through at the moment, and players like Irving, we've seen in the past, we've seen Cochrane, we've seen a whole collection of guys, Hickey as well playing just now, looks like a very good player. I've never seen anything out of Brandon which indicates that he'll be anything above a Stranraer player in 2 years' time.
He must have made like 25, 30 appearances for Hearts by now. He does keep popping up and you keep thinking, oh, maybe he's going to do something. They've tried him in midfield, they've tried him right back quite a lot, right wing back, all over the place. And I think all over the place is appropriate for him, actually. He's not been able to pin it down. And now, maybe he could be like a Brad McKay, where you're like, this guy is hopeless, but yet he's somehow manages to carve out a niche when he drops down a level and look alright, and you're like, okay, he's not quite as bad as he seemed at Hearts, all the expectation of a bigger club, etc.
Then there's Kevin McCarty. So
yeah, well,
yeah. No, I mean,
he's still playing the Championship.
No, that's true. I know, that's true.
Centre half.
Craig's right about it in terms of that team. You look at it and it is like a kind of team that would finish 9th or 10th most season, and they do have injuries, but that is absolutely Levine's team. Like, that is his collection of players that he's brought together. You know, the injuries play a part in it, obviously, in the fact that the team's as weak as that, but you know, McLean, Nick Piazza, they were his two strikers that he brought in, like, and they've been hopeless for, I mean, Nick Piazza's certainly been very poor since halfway through last season, I'd say. Mulroney, Whelan, Clare, I really don't like Clare.
No, he seemed to be Levine's big project as well, and he seemed to put a lot of time and effort into bringing him in, a lot of time and effort into talking him up, and
I still don't really know what he does. I don't know what Sean Clare's best position is. I don't know what Sean Clare's best attribute is.
They brought him in and he was number 9, and you're like, is he a striker? Yeah. And now he's changed to number 8, and he's like, well, he's definitely not a central midfielder, as we've seen several times, and it's just, yeah, I feel like he is one of these guys, you see them quite a lot, and you look at him and you go, yeah, you've got talent, but you can't quite work out
what way to actually use that talent.
And maybe they eventually will, but it's not like he's like 19 or something. I think he's in his early to mid 20s. He's not like a child. If I click on him, he'll tell you he's 20, he's 22.
There's a whole collection of moments in this game as well, which highlight first and foremost where Motherwell are and where Hearts are. And it seems like there's a whole lot of very good sort of examples in terms of the mess the Hearts are in and how well prepared Motherwell are at the moment. I'm not getting carried away with the Motherwell team as it is. They were very, very good. From the off, I watched bits and pieces on Wisecouts. I was trying to pick up particular things. Watching in particular Colin Doyle's distribution, which is Hearts, whatever percentage of possession Hearts had during the game, I reckon about 85% of that was Colin Doyle. Because Motherwell just kept pushing it back. They spent the entire game isolating Christoph Berra and Colin Doyle on the ball. I'm a bit lost as to how Doyle's ended up being number one. Slamel has his moments, but I would say is at a more consistent level. His clangers are probably equally as bad, even, but Doyle, I don't really understand.
I think with Zlamel, it feels like Levine just trying anything now to get a performance. You know, Zlamel's had a few high-profile gaffes, and he doesn't necessarily give the centre-half the most confidence. He's a really good shot stopper most of the time, but you know, he does make mistakes on a basis too regularly for somebody who you want as your first choice goalkeeper. And well, Doyle isn't any better. It's just a kind of throw the dice.
It's got to be somebody. Yeah. But as an example, again, the first of the perfect examples I thought was the first Motherwell goal, which saw 8 Hearts players within the 6-yard box and Declan Gallagher getting an unopposed free header. And it is, as bad as that is, I thought it was really well worked by Motherwell. The movement from Scott, stepping away from McLean onto Berra, completely manages to befuddle two of the most experienced players in the Scottish top flight in Berra and McLean, which allows Gallagher who was marked by Sean Clare. Again, I think we can highlight that his main attribute is not marking people at corners.
Even if Craig Levine hasn't done his homework properly, big Craig Halkett's going to be like, by the way, boys, Gallagher, I played with him last season. maybe I can mark him.
He's got something about him, perhaps. Yeah. But Gallagher absolutely thundered the header in for his first Motherwell goal. Following on from this as well, the second goal, you've got Ikpeazu playing a beautiful through ball to Sherwin Seedorf, who came on to it and hit probably about the hardest strike of a ball I've seen this season, I think.
Yeah, it's aesthetically very pleasing.
Every bit of it, particularly Colin Doyle, like getting up really, like staying on the ground way too long, but then getting up really quickly because he thinks it's hit the bar and it's going to come back out, and he's jumped around to try and get it. But he's already been in the ground for what looks like about a minute by the time he gets back up.
Yeah, that Dobby goal against Aberdeen last year in the Cup, that's the kind of only equivalent I can think of that was hit with such
venom.
Yeah, venom's the word.
Seedorf is, I think he'll be up there like that. That's the impression I've got from what I've seen from him so far. He'll have whole games where he doesn't show up, and then he'll have moments like that, and you'll watch him and think, oh, you should be moving on, you should be playing at a higher level. And I think I saw someone on Motherwell forum,
Pat and Bob wrote today, describing him as peak Lionel Ainsworth / Chris Humphrey and Jermaine Hilton as peak Henrik Oyama, because both of those goals are absolutely Stuart McCall's Motherwell of like Ainsworth and Humphreys scored very similar goals against Dundee United from just about the same point on the park, on the opposite side, as they're right-footed. And then Seedorf did that again. That was the first thing that popped into my mind, because again, very aesthetically pleasing goals thundering at the top of the net.
No, I was going to say, what's your feeling on Seedorf? Is it kind of that he will just be a bit of a okay, some good sometimes and kind of not others? Because to be honest, like there's a history of people with famous names doing absolutely nothing. So I had next to no expectations from this season. He seems to be, for the moment, surpassing them a bit.
I think the fact that he is, at the level he was to where he is now, I would say he's way ahead of where anyone, or well, certainly where I anticipated he would be. Motherwell seemed quite good at identifying players with attributes that they think they can mould within a system within the team. And we've seen that over a significant, throughout Robinson's reign as manager. Charlie Dunn's the best example of that, in that he came in after best part of over a year out of the game. But you can't teach big and you can't teach fast. Mm. Fine, we'll teach you everything else in order to get yourself through a game. And I think Seedorf and Hilton in that sense play into that as well, and that Seedorf is so ludicrously quick. You can't, that's an attribute. You can't make a player faster, but you can make him a better footballer once you've got him.
The Russians will disagree, Graham.
The Russians may disagree with you. I wouldn't, however, because I like opening my front door with my own hands. As I said, Motherwell spent a lot of time isolating better as well. There was points where it was two of the Motherwell three just cutting off Halkett because he's significantly better on the ball than Berra, and Berra just looks broken. We've kind of done this on the podcast week to week at this moment in time. But what I enjoyed most of all is that Motherwell front three, by the time they came off, all three of them were substituted. The Hearts back four just looked like they just wanted off. Like just didn't want to play anymore. They'd had enough of this game. I'm done with this. And then Motherwell brought in three more fast units to go and run at them for the last half an hour, and that's a lot of fun. I'm fully on board that as well. Alan Campbell again was outstanding, and Liam Donnelly, I think, despite the fact that he stopped scoring goals in this game, he, I think, had his best game for us. In the other games he scored and he looked fine, but as a central midfielder he looked an awful lot more like a central midfielder in the sort of role that he should be in that game. I also like that we kicked fuck out of people as well.
I think Robinson like has really grown on me in terms of just what he gets out of players. He reminds me a lot of Eddie Howe.
Yeah.
Like there's something about his kind of stature and everything about him, and his team's playing a quite a similar way. And how, as you've talked about a lot, Robinson kind of having his issues and having to change how he set things up and really have a kind of re-evaluation of what he did. And the fact that he was able to do that successfully and not just stick to
it's not a rigid principle, the opposite end.
I have a feeling that there will be a big job will come up for Robinson in England maybe in the coming year, because what he's done is really impressive in terms of moulding a group of good players into a really exciting team to watch as well. You know you're going to get generally entertainment when Motherwell
this is the third team he's had to build as well, and every time it's making players better and selling players for money. There was chatter today about there's nine clubs tracking James Scott. The guy's played like less than, 20 games or something like that as well. And that's very much a case of we rate him, we've given him a contract, we're playing him, figuring out that playing him as a centre forward is not really going to work for him. So we'll play him on the left-hand side because he's got good feet and he is quick, so he can learn how to play there as well. And he can learn how to play against men rather than and play against fullbacks as opposed to playing against big centre-halves. And just everything that we're doing is working well for us at the moment. I don't anticipate that'll last forever.
Well, I was going to say, because the front three or the kind of attacking players that you've got, that's the, if you're looking at it on paper, that's maybe the area where you're like, they've got a bit of a weakness there. Some of these players I don't know much about, or some of them you can see being patchy, but the fact that he is getting that, at the time being, in when it's a team like Motherwell, you can only expect it to be consistent really for a period of time.
Up till Christmas, until people figure it out.
Yeah, but again, he's shown that he can change things up if teams do figure it out. But with Robinson, one of the the big things is that he wins results, he wins games that they should win. So that game at the weekend, you know, he should be beating Hearts given how Hearts are playing, and they did it comfortably. They won the last three in a row, and they were all games where you think they are the form team, and they've gone out and shown it, and he's kind of done that over his time at Motherwell, that barring that kind of dip that he had.
Yeah, at the start, during the start of last season. Again, the difference between the start of last season and the start of this season is notable. And again, as I've said various times as well, he's learning from mistakes that he has made. And that's all from a manager at that level, that's all we can really ask from him. So, Kilmarnock 2, Hibernian 0. It's good that Hibernian have been both on the end of and part of the two most shaggable passes of the season so far.
A long, ambitious punt, I believe, is what it was described as. It was a funny game.
I enjoyed your message into the group chat, which was along the lines of, I can't decide whether we're brilliant or a mess.
Yeah,
it could be either of these things at this point.
It's just you're trying to judge, you've obviously got a new team, and you're trying to judge, are we good, are we not good? And since the Connors Key game, which was a shambles, I've not seen anything from us that's made me go, oh, this is really a worry. However, we'd really been struggling to create stuff. But there were starting to be little shoots in the Aberdeen game. There's a couple of things, not much. Obviously, we won last week, or 2 weeks ago, it was scrappy. And then Saturday, they're starting to create more. They're starting to get more comfortable in the system. There are changes. The fullbacks are playing much higher up the park. Hammerlining's obviously a much more attacking option than Taylor was. El McCreaney's starting to settle in. He was fantastic. He was my man in the match on Saturday. And so you're starting to see a team come together, but it's punctuated by these moments where we didn't look quite as rigid, moments where passes were going astray, and this was all in the first half, but the second half they just thought they were fantastic, came out flying and thoroughly deserved the win, helped by Hibs being humpty.
So it was something which I know you'd highlighted in terms of the Kilmarnock's play is similar to last year and they're growing into it, and it was something that Cunning Colin on Twitter had highlighted as well, and that Hibs to test or Kilmarnock's stats weren't alarming in any way at all, but they were just kind of lacking something, as you'd highlighted and as he'd highlighted, lacking something in creating chances. Is Liam Miller now stepping in to fill the void that Jordan Jones has kind of left in it as a wide player?
It was funny, Miller, I thought, for 60 minutes, well, 55 minutes on Saturday was
it's really specific.
Oh no, I was thinking 60 minutes when I was like, he actually scored in 56. So say for the first 55 minutes was really quiet, and I was thinking if we're going to make a sub here and we're going to bring on an Osman So or Harvey St. Clair or Dom Thomas, then it's probably going to be Miller who's going to be the one who's going to go. Then he got the goal and he got the wee boost from that, and he is very much a confidence player, because when he does get on the ball and he's flying, he's a nightmare to play against. He's so quick and he's very, because of where he comes from, because he's kind of got that Liverpool schooling and all that, and he's also quite clearly a kind of, he thinks about his football and he's quite mature for a teenager or a 19, 20 year old. He's a very good player to have in your team in that situation, because there's times where you'll be on a counter attack and he will just put his foot in the ball and not just always make the direct drive, and so there's just a lot to admire about him as a player. He's not having the impact Jones had, you know, a year, 18 months ago yet, but you can see that potential in him. That's the one thing that's missing, I think, from the midfield three, Power Dicker, El McCreaney. They are still very similar. El McCreaney's been asked to play the more advanced role, but with that constantly being asked to win the ball back, I lost count of the amount of times he won the ball back. It was the most obvious part of his game. Constantly making interceptions, constantly getting his foot in, constantly reading the game so well. But then your problem is, he's your advanced midfielder. He's got Rory McKenzie on his right, your best player in the world. Rory McKenzie's not the most creative. Brophy is running a lone furrow up front, he's not very creative. So you're very much putting so much reliance on Miller. But this time, the fullbacks are getting into much more. And Hammerlining, I think, is just a fantastic player to watch. He plays left back like a winger. Like, he'll just come inside.
Aggressively. He'll come aggressively inside on his right foot.
Yeah, and he'll, and you, so he's, I had not necessarily that high hopes for him when he came in. I thought he was going to be cover, you know, he'd maybe get a game here and there. But since I watched him, I'm like, he's definitely my type of player. So the one thing I've noticed from Alessio, every single player he's brought in that's played, he's been very good. Del Fabbro strolled another game.
He was very unfortunate not to get on the score sheet as well.
And it was funny when we scored the first goal, the players were kind of all gathered together, and Del Fabbro was the one turning around to the crowd, like trying to cheer everyone up, like doing a big. And it's so, and Brunescu, who I had major doubts about having watched.
I've got on my notes, Jim Halls to the Scottish Premiership, and maybe he's all right.
Yeah, he's been pretty good, and he's a big boy, which helps.
Yeah.
He fills up the goal a lot. So, lots to be positive about. With the asterisk that Hibs were really, really
good. Just one final thing as well. I really liked El Macrini's goal. The touch that he takes just to step it and step over the ball and just move it that few inches just so he can get the proper strike on it. That was a guy who, despite playing a handful of games for Kilmarnock, just arriving here, just absolutely reeked a confidence. Yeah. Just like, I am so comfortable right here. And I think there might be a good bit more to come from him as well. Someone that there might be less to come from, Melker Hallberg is perhaps not the tough-tackling, hard grafter that Hibs really wanted him to be.
No, I mean, he scored a good goal, which was ruled out correctly. But yeah, I mean, that's been their problem the whole way through the season so far, is that only one guy is missing, and they've not really brought anyone in. They've tried to, you know, fill it with a couple of different types of player, because he did so much as one person, and they've tried to kind of put in like Savella, Hallberg now, and then see if Malin or Allen can pick up any of that as well. But they just can't, you know, the amount of turf that he covered last season, the amount of work that he put in defensively and then helped kind of launch attacks as well. They're so static, that midfield. And the thing is, they've been static right from the start of the season. Certainly the shape of Hallberg, it doesn't look like he's going to be a kind of the guy that's going to change that at all.
He was fine. Of the Hibs players, he was certainly by far not the worst. I mean, Horgan was sunk in place. He was awful. I was ready to message everyone. I'm like, I'm waiting until he's off the park to do this. Vela was a funny one, because every time I've seen him, I thought he looks like a guy who wants to put his foot on the ball, who wants to play football. He's not necessarily an attacking player, but he's got legs and all that. But he was constantly being the one to drop deep to get the ball off the centre-backs. But then he was almost playing in between them at times. And it just wasn't working out, because he wasn't doing what he wanted to do. Like, both the Hibs full-backs were playing really high up the park as well. Naismith was, as you saw for the Miller goal, Naismith was nowhere, which was why O'Donnell had that space to pass it into. Stevenson was very much the same on the other side, and so you can see what he was trying to do, and he's trying to get Horgan, Allen, Malin, Owen, Narrow in the middle of the park where they can hurt you. I'm not sure Camperi's a striker if you want to play like that, and Doidge is certainly not the striker if you want to play like anything. So there's just a lot to worry about, and it was very, not immediately, but the end, very reminiscent of the day the floodlights kept going out, when we beat Neil Lennon, sent out the team with like all the defenders in no shape, and Kelly beat them 3-0, and by the end they just packed in, they just given up, and Saturday again they just chucked it, and it must be a real worry for Hecky.
It might not be his to worry about too much longer. I mean, maybe up to the weekend, I guess. But you look at that team though, and you just think there's not one element of it that is a success. Like, not a single part of the defence have been poor. There have been gaps over. Whitaker's obviously been dreadful. Naismith came in and didn't actually do any better really at the weekend. Hanlon's had a poor start to the season. We've talked about the midfield. Horgan's kind of done it in fits and starts, but again, it has been fits and starts. Allen, I think Allen and Malin, I mean, that's not a, they're not working at the moment. And Camberi, if I was Hibs at the moment, you would kind of cut your losses on him. I mean, they've only got bloody Holly Shaw on the bench, so they're you know, you look at those players on paper and you think, oh, they've got quite a decent bunch of players there, but actually when you kind of drill into it, they're a real mess. They're better on paper than that Hearts team We saw it at the weekend, but
there's at least a bit of variation in the players that Hibs have there. Yeah. What I found odd was in Heckey's post-match press conference saying that they need to work hard on the training ground. Like, yeah, that's always true, because everyone can always work hard on the training ground, but fundamentally the player that you need, which is the ball-winning central midfielder, of which Kilmarnock have three who are all better than every one of yours.
You've got a fourth one on the bench, hasn't
you? Exactly, yeah. You don't have that player, and that's, it doesn't matter how hard you work or whatever else, if you fundamentally don't have a player that can do that, you're then asking someone else to do it, which is going to take time, because you're going to have to develop into that, or alternatively, you just don't, you don't have that body.
That was what his post-match would have worried me a lot if I was a Hibs fan, and the fact that he said they controlled the game, because he can't possibly believe that, because they didn't. They were not awful in the first half, but they were probably a better team. But
Alan Preston, I think it was him, whoever was at the game, couldn't believe that Kelly won it, which seemed a bit mad given that the Hibs didn't really have a chance, I don't think, in the second half. But
I think, it was there seemed to be lots of people at the game who had some strange takes on it, but I think there wasn't a Kelly fan left that game anything other than delighted with the performance. It wasn't, there was no sense in which it was a smash and grab in any way. It could have easily finished 0-0, but it was, I don't think Hibs were really, as I say, Brunescu made two saves and they were both from long range, so there wasn't like some sense of impending doom. Mm-hmm.
Just before we move on to the rest of the games, come the next Monday, who's still on a job, Heckey or Specky?
Both.
Yeah, I think Levine will still be in a job. I think Heckenbottom, they might, if I think Heckenbottom will probably go, because Hibs are less tied to Heckenbottom. There's all this complication with Levine and his role as director of football and that kind of stuff. He'll chunter on to at least middle of the week or something. Like, I don't think there'll be a knee-jerk, and it's not really knee-jerk, but I don't think there'll be what Hearts feel as a knee-jerk reaction if results don't.
And then they've got, I mean, the fact there's new owners come in makes it much easier to make that call of, like, this isn't our guy. He's, since that run when he beat all the junk in the league game and everyone was raving about him, he's really done nothing. He's pretty much lost to every half-decent team he's come up against. I think they barely won a game after the split. Did they beat Hearts after the split, and that was it?
Yeah, that's right.
And then they've carried that on where they left off at the start of this season. So I'm aware I'm saying this again ahead of them obviously coming to Rugby Park and putting us out of the cup in the next midweek, but they are not in a good place.
Okay, so we'll move on to Ibrox, which saw possibly the most predictable injury of all time.
That was not the best of debuts for Ryan Kent, but yeah.
Two wingers in 2 weeks in that vicious grass pit.
Grass pitches must be stopped. They're bringing down people left, right and centre at the moment. What in the end sounds like a fairly routine win for Rangers, but could again go down as a potentially big result for Rangers. Started off with an absolutely smashing penalty from Stephen Wallace.
It was brilliant. It's one of those kind of perfect ones. It was right in the corners. Even if the keeper had gone the right way, he wasn't saving it anyway. And the Livingston were decent. I think, you know, it's a good win for Rangers on the basis that Livingston have had a good start to the season. They kind of know again how they're playing. They did create some chances, and I mean for Livingston, it doesn't really matter. It was, in a sense, a wee bit of a free hit because they've had such a decent start to the season. But, they'd be disappointed with the goals, given that the first one they conceded was a free kick that didn't touch anyone who went in.
They are, for me, the single most infuriating type of goals to concede. Yeah. Of all conceding all goals is, in one way or another, frustrating. Free kicks from out on the edge of the box, where it's just been slung in there, vaguely in the direction of goal, and nobody touching it goes in, for me, mainly because I saw Graham Smith concede about 400 of them over the course of various seasons.
Jamie McDonald was bad at that last season, but Tavernier, to be fair to him, has a knack of scoring those, and the reason is that he's set piece deliveries are fantastic.
He puts them in that area
every time.
Yeah, and the pace on it kind of means that the keeper's almost doesn't have time to like make a decision on it. Like, it's kind of gone past him before he knows.
For Rangers, it's funny because they had a big game coming up on Thursday, so you do wonder where their heads were in relation to that. It was a very odd situation for both them and Celtic this weekend, in the sense that they both do need to win all the league games, but they are also
very
love a run in Europe. And so I think, yeah, just getting through the game with a win when it looked at points, you know, at 1-0 down, they're panicking, and then even at 1-1, where they had decent chances, and so even and the game was pretty much still alive until the very last minute. Not quite the last minute, but so just getting the win is what matters to them, and it's Morelos again that gets a crucial goal, which he seems to do very often.
He looked raging about this one as well.
he's just a funny guy, isn't he? But he misses a lot of chances, but he also scores a lot of chances, and that's what you want for your centre forward. And big moment. Okay, it's Livingston at home, but it's a big moment in terms of they can't fall 5 points behind.
Ten games out of 11, Morelos is going to get plenty of chances to finish.
Yeah. One of my favourite things about Morelos is the way he rolls defenders. He did it for a couple of chances in the weekend, and he does have that big bum that kind of means that he can keep the ball away from defenders. But I don't know. There's something about doing that that I really like, and he's especially good at it, kind of rolling defenders and kind of making, you know, his close control is good enough that he can get a shot in once he's done it as well.
Again, that Livingston will be raging to concede a goal like that where he's just completely left unmarked. Yeah. He's like, okay, he's not massive, but he's always going to be a threat. He's got to be
the first thought in your mind at all times, you would imagine.
And they left him, he wasn't even picked up by anyone.
I have to say, I reckon you could ask Gary Holt to manage just about anything. Like, you put him as a call centre manager, and productivity will go up by about 40% after 3 weeks.
Especially if you get Martindale as his assistant.
Correct. After his terrifying visit to hospital, where apparently his body was falling apart.
It was terrifying, it was so cheery about it.
His blood results, and they told him
it was 145,000 for a normal person's 50, and he thought, he presumed, 50,000, no 50. Like, your blood is essentially fizzy water at this point.
He's certainly in the right job for somebody with ridiculously high blood pressure as well.
He just seems so chipper about it. I got a wee fright, but these things happen, that your blood turns out a red colour.
I mean, that does kind of sum up Hartley through his time at Livingston. Like, he's not really, despite things going wrong, he's not really seemed flappable. He seemed like sort of a decent presence around the place. He's like one of these kind of very inoffensive managers in the league.
He was like in the army and stuff, so there's probably a sense of like,
this doesn't matter.
It's quite as stressful getting shelled by Iraqi.
But again, his post-match press, he's like, I'm really pleased with them. I told them to go toe-to-toe, and they went toe-to-toe, and they absolutely did. Yeah. And you see, throughout the afternoon, none of the Livy players looked in the slightest bit sort of overawed or concerned by the whole thing. Okay, yeah, we back ourselves, and again, I feel like we do this every week, but there's a collection of guys there that are playing at a higher level than they ever have done, probably at a higher level than they ever potentially will as well.
If you look at the managers and the kind of teams who are, I won't say the bottom six teams, because Livingston very well could not be, but the teams who have the kind of bottom six budgets, and you've got guys like Holt, Goodwin, the Kettlewell, where you know those players are going to run through brick walls for them because of the type of characters they are. And that can be the difference, because there are other teams in the league where I think they struggle to get players to run through walls of money, where they can collect that as they run through. Great metaphors, but...
I wonder, though, given Dykes went off, he's actually turned out to be sort of grudgingly quite like Dykes. He's a bit of a shite bag, but I grudgingly quite like him.
It's that big grin that he's got while he does it.
A lot like Gary Hooper. I've just noticed this. Gary Hooper face.
But I wonder. I mean, it was two bookings, wasn't it? So it'll be a game out. Yeah. But they've got who have they got next? Actually, Aberdeen at home. So that's the one place that they're not particularly deep in as centre forward, and as I say, Dykes is kind of
just play Scott Robinson there.
Would be the kind of
Scott Robinson. Scott Robinson will start at centre forward against Aberdeen. We'll go to the Highlands, where we saw possibly the least surprising thing of the weekend as Ross Laidlaw chucked one in.
Mm. It was
low quality. That's like as mistakes go, it's like, you know how you have sometimes you have a goalkeeping error. So the Colin Doyle one against Motherwell last season, yeah, where you can say, okay, yeah, that's a big mistake, but you can kind of see that why a goalkeeper can see the goal like that. This ball was trickling towards him at like a snail's pace. How have you possibly not got your body behind that? It sums up what Ross Laidlaw.
He's not. His concentration is not really there for a goalkeeper, which is a bit of a flaw. I mean,
he just tones it. It's just absolutely.
Yeah, but it was one of those ones where the three of us could have comfortably picked that up. It was so poor. But fair play to him. I'm sure he's a lovely guy, so I kind of feel bad about digging him out every time I'm on. But at some point, surely they're going to be like, we've got to get another.
How have Ross County
Jack Ruddy?
Yeah,
how have they got themselves into this situation? Okay, they brought the boy in from Chelsea who immediately got injured. Mm. You've got promoted, you've got a bit of money behind you, you're able to bring in players in other positions. How have you got yourself into a position where Ross Laidlaw is starting the season as your number one? Mm. And how are you still winning games in spite of that?
Yeah, it's a bit of an odd one there. I mean, it was a wonderfully big lumpy finish from big lumpy Ross Stewart as well, which made me really happy again.
Yeah. I really like
Ross Stewart as well. Just a big thump of a boy.
It's especially, obviously against St Mirren, considering they didn't fancy him when they got promoted last year, so that'll have been a big goal for him in terms of, they did have good players when he was there. They disappeared very quickly. So he kind of didn't fit in some ways when he did sign there, which is why he went to Alloa in the first place. But then when he got promoted and Stubbs cleared everyone else out, you'd have thought they might have gone, give this guy a go, but they didn't. And he obviously moved on to County. And yeah, he's becoming a real dangerous striker. And given the kind of background he has, he's still only 23. He was playing started out junior football and he's kind of worked his way up through Albion Rovers, through St Mirren. I mean, St Mirren temporarily played at Alloa. He's got that upward trajectory where he's one of these guys where you think, what is his limit? You don't know.
Yeah, I have no concept as to how good he can be. And as you say, there are elements of his game which are a bit rough and ready, but who gives a shit? Really, just don't care.
Yeah, I would say he looks very much like a kind of lower level championship, kind of League One striker, in that he's kind of big and lanky. He doesn't look, like Lyndon Dykes came from Championship, but had a bit more of an obvious physicality about him.
And tattoos and all
that kind of stuff. Whereas this kind of gawky teenager type guy, Ross Stewart, looks like, you kind of think, he looks like the type of guy you maybe chuck him with 10 minutes left a few times this season. But fair play to him, he's been great, and some of his finishes have been great. The one thing that he's maybe not been able to do yet is make a difference away from home. So at home, I think he scored in the three league games, but he's not scored away from home. And it's maybe away games where he's going to struggle a bit more because he doesn't. There's a bit more kind of work to do. He needs to do kind of the job of two people almost, and he's maybe not quite got that level of. He's not learned that yet, basically. But when he's playing in a kind of front two, and he can go up one on one with centre forwards, he's fine.
I'm still not entirely sure I understand how Ross County win these games. Because the team that they're putting out is a very brave midfield, and I feel like I say this every week, but again, a midfield of Ewan Henderson, Ian Vigers, Harry Payton and Michael Gardine, which saw Chalmers replace Vigers as well very quick early on. Like, there's just not an awful lot of scrapping in that midfield. And again, to be fair, the St Mirren midfield is kind of similar in that respect as well, so just two teams going at it. I had a question for you, Craig, as well, in terms of the sort of late flag for the Obika goal that was chalked off. Is that a refereeing decision in terms of, has that been a decision to hold off on putting flags up?
Well, I don't think it's a hold off. It's more like the assistant doesn't know. I'm trying to think of what there basically needs to be that communication of, maybe my guess is the assistant doesn't see that Obika gets a touch to put the ball in the net. So it's that case where he's having to ask the ref, did Obika touch it? And then the ref tells him, I did. he's like, okay, then it's offside. Where, and it was stupidity from Mbeki. You can understand why a player
it's really poor.
And all that, but that ball's going in the net. You do not need to go anywhere near it.
Really poor game awareness from him. And just leave it.
Yeah,
just leave it.
And okay, it was borderline, but ultimately, he may well have been just on or just off. It was a tight decision, and it was good. A good work from the officials in terms of actually having the discussion and making the decision. It's kind of what you want to see from them, not just we won't discuss this. And so yeah, I guess you could understand that decision. It was interesting. I think it says a lot about Ross County, and it says a lot about their attitude, I think, actually, last season as well, of how they won the game, which was you've got your fullback
Michael Fraser.
Two minutes to go.
6 yards out. Yeah, it wasn't like he was coming in from the back post.
It was just the ball was out in the wing and he saw it.
And it was certainly a shame to see Kirk Broadfoot being thrown up.
Yeah, I mean, what happens in St Mirren training, do you think? Do they track men in St Mirren training?
If they've done a wee bit of shape, they might not have conceded that goal.
That's exactly what we're looking for. As we said a few times, Jim Goodwin asked us to judge St Mirren not after the first three games but after the next three, so we'll do that next week. Aberdeen won, St Johnstone won, which looked like the world's most athletic pub game I've ever seen.
First goal,
Ryan Hedges,
God, every aspect of it,
the balance in terms of the quality of the finish with what preceded the quality of the finish was honestly, it was like watching a kid's birthday party play football.
So did you think it was a good quality finish?
I thought it was a good finish from Hedges.
I thought
Hedges had taken his time and put in a good finish, but every touch before that was bad. Yeah. Like the previous like 15, 20 touches.
If I'm remembering it correctly, it started with Bryson on the edge of the box.
It looked like they were playing on a trampoline.
Having like a really weak shot, and then it got cleared and then it bounced in and back out, and it's like, These two teams finished like fourth and seventh last season. Yeah. You're not talking about
They finished fourth and seventh in like the Lanarkshire Churches League, something along those lines.
It kind of shows you the funk Aberdeen are in just now, doesn't it? Like despite some of the players that they've got in there, there's just a complete lack of invention. That McInnes was saying at the end that second half they didn't create enough at all. The tempo was really low, and when you've got Hedges who's scored a few goals, you've got Bryson in there, you've got McGinn who's had a kind of poor season so far, Ferguson, and then Cosgrove up front, and bringing McLennan off the bench as well. You think there should be enough there, but everything seems so stale for them.
Cosgrove looked like he was playing in a different postcode to the rest of the Aberdeen players. He was so, and again, it's not on him. There was nobody near him for big chunks of the game
He's a player that's really starting to impress me a lot, though, Cosgrove. Yeah. I think he'll go far, actually. I was unsure of him, but even in that game where the rest of his team were poor, there were moments where this boy just...
I think he's only got one goal from open play, though, which is the only thing. You're right, but he still looks decent, but
the way Aberdeen are playing, they played Kelly at Rugby Park 2 weeks ago, and I'm not surprised they couldn't score from open goal because they literally got nowhere near him at any point.
They've got a few problems injury-wise as well, Aberdeen. They've got Bryson, Ojo and Gallagher all of injuries, so you're kind of starting to think they might have a few problems. I mean, it's weird not talking about Aberdeen as like somebody who's kind of competing. I mean, I know they're kind of up there, they're about fourth in the league, but it kind of seems strange.
Happened at the start of last season as well, when we were all writing them off, and then they came flying back, and they should have probably ended up finishing above Kelly, but didn't. So I'm reluctant to write them off because there are parts to that squad. McInnes has been there and done it before, and it does seem a bit different this year in the sense that there's just a lack of, you don't see where the inspiration's coming from this time. I think it will have to be Ferguson, and it may have to be another, like McLennan came in and gave them a spot last season, if it's him again, or if it's like another player of that ilk who just comes in. I know that they've got a couple of the young boys that are starting to kind of, I think Anderson obviously was out in Dunfermline last season, and they've got a couple of these boys where like maybe they're going to come in and do something, but it's a lot to ask.
I think McLennan has talked about making an impact this season, so he obviously did well in the under-21s. It was against Croatia, scored a double, wasn't it? and he's talked about coming in. It does feel a wee bit like this is his chance for a breakout year, especially if McGinn continues to kind of flatter to deceive. There's a chance in that. You kind of feel like McInnes is willing to give him a shot if he can kind of prove it on a consistent basis. So I think him certainly over Wright, who's obviously now injured, but McLean is the one that looks like you could see a player, like a kind of sturdy player who would could be there for
the McInnes would trust more than anything else. And to round off that game, we had another crap goal as well.
I think Joe Lewis has still got it in his head about the offside decision that they didn't get in the build-up, and he's almost like, you see this sometimes with a player, like, they just switch off a wee bit, even though the game's going on, he's just almost like, it's almost like he's kind of sleepwalking, it's almost like Hank's VAR's going to rule it out anyway, it's like he's sleepwalking and then all of a sudden he's dived over the top of the ball, and another rubbish goal, but I think St Johnstone were worth a point from the game.
This is what I was going to ask, and when do St Johnstone results change? As there seems to be more optimism around St Johnstone and the fact that they've got better. Still 5 games into the league, haven't won a game. They've had challenging fixtures in there,
but and after the League Cup group as well, which was frankly awful.
But they don't play relegation rivals Hearts until the end of October. And while obviously there are no easy games, their next run of fixtures before they play Hearts is Rangers, Inform, Motherwell, St Mirrenachies and County, which you need to get something out of those games, otherwise you are in serious bother at that point. Chance of ending up in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm not massively concerned about them just now. I think, if you think about it, they kind of did their transfer business later than pretty much anyone else.
Well, I've just done some today.
the fact that Holt's just relatively recently come in, Ralston's come in, for all the difference that'll make, May's come in.
Just on another thing, I'm really disappointed May didn't take 9, because just on the off chance St Johnstone make it to the Scottish Cup final again, because it would be May 9th. Last time it was May 17th. It really bothers me that they didn't do it.
I don't think there's any danger of that happening. But I think, you look at their team and it's a decent team. It's a kind of okay put together team. If O'Halloran's form picks up this season, he was disappointing last season, him and Swanson, when they came in. Kennedy's decent. Dre Wright kind of came on for the last 30 minutes. I think there's enough there for St Johnstone that I wouldn't be massively worried. But you're right, there comes a point where if they have another couple of defeats, or they don't win in the next couple of weeks, that the pressure kind of, it's maybe just that kind of scoreboard pressure almost, rather than the fact that they're
The penalty decision was another one where a referee, this was more a case of the referee making an arse of it and his linesman digging him out of a hole when everyone else on the ground knew it wasn't a penalty. Especially because, Matthew Kennedy is a diver, he's done it several times. That's one of his things. He's done it since he was 17 and maybe saved it for Kelly. He's a player who likes to dive, and it was a baffling decision to give in the first place. So, it was strange to see Murray Davidson kind of seeming upset about it in the press today, because it clearly wasn't a penalty.
Well, I think Wright was more upset with the one on Davidson, but then, to be honest, you can't really tell from the footage whether or not Cosgrove's barged him in the back or not.
So that takes us to
Johnson had missed it anyway.
It takes us to the most consistently dull television pick, Hamilton 0, Celtic 1.
Oh man, this game was terrible. And there's always something about Hamilton Celtic games on the telly where you're least appealing fixture I think you can have.
Every time it's Hamilton, because Hamilton Rangers had some good games over the past few years. Hamilton on the telly generally has something about it, but just Hamilton Celtic every time it's
The only one I ever remember being any good was the time Billy Reid kicked water bottles or bashed his head off the dugout or something. We drew one each. It was a midweek game, and that was about 12 years ago, so I'm not sure we should be counting on that very often. It was a terrible game, and I think I realised that the reason Hamilton, some other teams in the league can get near Celtic because they have some good quality footballers who on their day can play at Celtic's level. Hamilton don't. They build their team around that strong work ethic, etc. But the downside of that is they don't have any individual talent in the squad at all.
I think Lewis must have been the only kind of bright spot in the second half. I think the first half he was kind of overrun by Celtic. Celtic kind of controlled that first half after the first 5 minutes without really doing anything, but Hamilton didn't really get a touch of the ball. Where in the second half, you could see moments where he would kind of get on the ball and try to make something happen, or Beck, when he came on, would try to make something happen. So they don't have, they don't have a ball.
It's like when they have those counter-attacks, even late in the game, 10-15 minutes to go, and Hamilton get on the ball and they're pushing into the midfield, and at no point do you think one of these midfielders is going to cut.
Somebody's going to break, yeah.
Whereas if Motherwell were playing, they've got players that can hurt them. Even like someone like St Mirren, even like a player like Dermis at St Mirren, not necessarily that brilliant, but you're like, well, he can unpick a defence.
Yeah, yeah.
There's just nothing in that Hamilton squad. They're all honest, hard-working players, and that will get them wins in other games. But when you play Celtic, it's just, you've not got...
I mean, the interesting thing after was that Rice was saying that he was basically happy with it, like the loss 1-0.
Then he gets scudded.
Celtic in the first kind of 5-10 minutes looked like they were going to put a barrel past him. Elyounoussi kind of looked all right in his debut. Christie was kind of getting a bit of space, always Forrest. But in fairness to Hamilton, I mean, they kind of massed ranks at the back, but Edward didn't get a kind of sighted goal at all. He was really well marshalled the whole way through. It was the same when Bayo came on. Elyounoussi kind of faded out the second half. Forrest was the only one who kind of occasionally looked like he might do something. But I guess if you're Hamilton, you've lost a goal after 4 minutes, you don't really have a lot of... I mean, you're relying on kind of an 18, 19-year-old plus a couple of subs to do something. Yeah, I suppose you take it. It gives them a bit of a template for how they maybe set up some other games.
Like, you could get a 0-0 against Celtic playing like that. You just kind of beat them playing like that.
On Celtic, how many games will Scott Brown play this season? Is the answer all of them?
50 plus, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, why?
Surely this is the game where you go, do you know what? You're going to have to play on Thursday, early kickoff on Saturday. So just go and have a seat. Sit yourself down, take a rest, whatever else. We've got 400 central midfielders anyway. Fine.
Yeah, but would there have been any worse with Encham in there? Well, no. I mean, if you look at how well Encham played when he came on against Rangers, he actually had a shout for being man of the match in that game, having come on Nolan Park about half an hour. And it's strange. I mean, I guess he's a captain and all that. And I mean, he'll want to play every week. And I'm not saying you have to do this every time, but...
There's a lot of players in that team who have played an awful lot.
McGregor's the same.
Yeah, just they've played a lot of football when perhaps they don't really need to. And I understand the logic of if you're playing well, keep doing it. But you're just putting a lot of strain on a lot of bodies there. And Forrest, Brown, McGregor, I are just back in as well. There was chatter about Julian having a head knock we've talked about this. I think Craig talked about this previously, just saying that the Celtic doctor spent 5 minutes with him, and I mean, to be fair, the Celtic doctor also spent 5 minutes with Dedrick Boyata, who didn't know what day it was.
it's hard to tell but
you're not going to judge it from it.
You're not the people who are commenting on it are not qualified medical experts.
In fairness, I suppose Lennon, because it was Lennon that said it was a blackout, I presume get told by the doctor that he had a brief blackout, and then it feels like the PR machines kind of got in and kind of went, because obviously if he's got a concussion, that has repercussions for further down the line, that they've gone, actually, no, he was fine, like you misspoke. It's the usual thing, but
in terms of the players, it is that case. Like, I think McGregor had played more minutes than any player in Europe last year, and that was something that Celtic were almost trying to be proud of. And it's like, you play a lot of games, and because of your success and because you have to qualify early in Europe, so your lack of success in that respect. But there is no need for Callum McGregor to be playing Scottish Cup games at home to Airdrie, which I think he played, and stuff like that. Like, give the boy a break, because you see it from some of his performances for Scotland. It just looks like he needs a break.
Yeah.
And when you play the way he does, with the energy that he does, don't over
burn him out.
Again, it's Hamilton Accies. You're going to win the game. It'll be fine. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. We are off to record the Patreon, which I believe we're doing a lower league winners and losers. given that Andy Sear and Raith Rovers won a game pretty well, so we thought we'd discuss that a little bit further. You can subscribe to that by hitting patreon.com/terracepodcast on the internet. The guys will be back on Thursday with some sort of show. The TV show that is inspired by this podcast starts again a week on Friday as well, so that will be back on BBC Scotland. So yeah, thanks very much, Craig.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Andy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Graham.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.